Lake Charles.
Everyone, and welcome to The Exchange. This is Cheryl Castile. It's all about cycling today, folks, and my guests in the studio, Charlie Kibbe and Dustin Judice. I always want to, you know, I was saying it before I came in, and I kept substituting the first two letters and calling you Justin. So Dustin Judice, they are members of the Acadiana Bicycle Company racing team here in the Acadiana area, which a lot of people know as the ABC racing team, the folks that are involved with cycling in the area. Today we're going to talk with both of them about their involvement with cycling, with racing, talk a bit about cycling in the Acadiana area, and then in the second half, we're going to spend some time talking about Trail, the nonprofit organization, is presenting the 7th annual La Vuelta de Acadiana, 4th of July weekend, July 5th through the 6th. And we'll give you some details on that and talk about how you can get involved if that's something that you would like to do. So welcome, you two.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's good to have you on here. What I want to start out with is because – with the two of you, there is a difference when you kind of cross over a line, when you are involved with an activity and then go into it in the way that the two of you do with racing. Then it becomes it's a passion. And so I'm always curious about how, you know, people's passions come into their lives and how they've got involved with it. So, Charlie, if you want to start by talking about, you know, how cycling just in general came into your life, how you started.
Well, several years ago, I was in my mid-30s, and my weight and my started to creep up, and my health started to decline a little bit. And my wife and I had a trip planned that year. It was 2008. And both had some motivation to kind of get in shape for that trip. It was a beach trip. And we both did P90X, workout routine.
Yeah.
Worked well. Both of us, you know, lost a lot of weight. But when it's over, it's a 90-day program. So what do you do at the end of the 90 days? And so I was lifting weights and doing some different kind of cardio activity, trying to keep my, you know, keep my fitness I had gained. And a couple of fellows where I was working at the time were riding bikes, had just gotten into it, and road bikes. And so I had done a lot of bike riding when I was a kid, BMX bikes and a little bit of road bike riding, but nothing serious. And so I decided to buy a bike, and it would be another way of doing some cardio. And started doing that, did that for about a year, and then, you know, became where I was doing more and more of that and less of any of the other kind of working out.
Yeah.
And so that probably went on for about 2 years. And around that same time, those guys decided, hey, they were going to do a race in 2010 called Rouge Roubaix in Baton Rouge.
Okay.
It's a 100-mile race and features
– holy cow.
Yeah, right.
Like a one-day 100-mile? No.
One day.
One day, yeah.
It's a race.
Yeah.
And about 30 miles of it are gravel and north of St. Francisville. So it's actually one of the hillier areas of Louisiana.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, sounds fine, you know, and no idea what I was getting into. And so we trained for it and went through that race and it was really, really tough.
Don't start out with like the 5 mile or the 10 mile.
Yeah.
Go to the
right. The hard one it's actually named one of the hardest races in the world.
Wow.
Several of these lists, you know, you see on the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know any of this at the time. You know, I thought it was just a bike race. But regardless of how hard it was, I ended up getting hooked there, you know, and just started really going into it deeper and deeper and to where I wasn't doing any other kind of working out, just that.
Well, did you have to have – for that, because you said part of it was on gravel, did you have to have like a cross-training bike with it?
No. So much of it's on the pavement that,
okay.
that you have to – if you want to be competitive, you have to ride a road – you're not required to, but you – you know, everybody rides a road bike. And
yeah. And so, for people that don't know, Charlie, when you say a road bike, that's with the thinner tires.
With the narrow tires, yeah, and the turned down handlebars, and usually at least 20 speeds.
Okay.
It used to be called a 10 speed. It had 10 speeds.
Sure.
Then, but
yeah, yeah.
Now there's 20, and some have 22.
Okay.
Some people do go with a little wider tire, but it's still a slick, mm-hmm, you know, yeah, racing style tire.
Yeah.
And
for any of the length of the races, is that a specification in terms of the tire size? Is that a
– It's a performance thing. So you,
okay,
you,
so it's just,
yeah,
how you want to do.
Performance drives it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If you would go much bigger or knobby tires, you would just be so much slower than everyone,
yeah,
else.
Got it.
So
it's, yeah.
Like, you would be better in the gravel on the knobby stuff, but on the road you would not be able to keep up. So
yeah, that would slow you down. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what do you think, you said after that it's like, boom, I was in it. What do you think it is about cycling that keeps you in it?
Well, it kind of ticks a lot of boxes for me. I'm an engineer by profession.
Yeah.
And, so there's a lot of technology in mechanical. I'm a mechanical engineer, so there's a lot of mechanical technology involved with the bikes. So I could, you know, nerd it out there. And then, and then, you know, we do a lot of monitoring of our heart rate and speed and power. And so there's a lot of – if you want to get into that, there's a lot of analysis you can do after the fact. Some people don't like that part of it. But,
yeah, yeah.
You know, it appeals to my, you know, my mind. And in high school, I played a lot of different sports and was in a lot of different types of activities like that. And during that time frame when I got out of shape, I wasn't. So I was missing kind of the competitive – aspect of it.
Yeah.
So the bike riding covers a lot of those boxes in one,
that's,
you know,
right,
kind of one activity.
And
the,
and there's a, that physical, I mean, when you consistently do something, there's that physical feeling that.
Right. You get the.
And you
get
crave
the,
that.
The runner's high.
Yeah,
that,
yeah,
they talk about, you know, and sense of accomplishment also. You know, and I have children, so my time is limited. And so, again, I can take care of fitness. I can take care of the competitive aspect, you know, and have a hobby that appeals to the mechanical side of my,
exactly,
my nature, too, all in one. So.
Well, you have – and we were talking about this before the show, but as I was looking up some things, you know, about you and about the cycling, you've been a very, very busy individual in the cycling circuit. And I said, especially since February, you have been involved in races almost every weekend.
Yeah, maybe every other weekend or so. Yeah, I have an understanding.
And sometimes
wife.
There was, yeah. But you also have done, let's see, recently the Harbor Master Criterium course that was just recently.
Sunday, yes.
Yeah, that was just last week. You play second overall.
No, I was.
Is that your cat?
I was fourth in that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I got that off of one of the websites.
Yeah.
It might have been second in your category or something like that for the Masters.
Not sure where.
Well,
they
let's just give you the
second,
yeah, place.
Sure, I'll take it.
But you know, but here what they have, and I think this is what they have, different things. So for that particular event that you were involved in, because on the same day they also, it must have been different parts of that. They have the loops that they call them.
Well, that event was a criterium, it's called.
Okay. And explain what that is for folks.
A criterium is a closed course race. So the course is typically less than a mile long, between,
okay,
a kilometer and a mile typically. And it's you repeat the course over and over. So you ride it in a circle. You know,
okay.
It's usually not – it's not a circle, but you ride it, you know, continuously for a set amount of time. And some of them are 40 minutes or 50 minutes or 60 minutes. And the judges –
And where are you doing this exactly? Like when you say you're right,
lots of different type of places. So mm-hmm. There'll be maybe city streets that they close off.
Okay.
This particular one on Sunday was in a parking lot at the harbor in New Orleans.
Got it.
So
okay.
big enough parking lot that they could put some cones and create a course.
Got it. Okay.
You know, that was that long.
Yeah.
And the idea typically is to have a number of turns to challenge, you know, cornering ability, sprinting ability, and, you know, different aspects of cycling. And so it goes on for a certain amount of time, and then the judges figure out how many laps there has to be remaining to get to the end of the race, and they'll hold up a card that tells you, for instance, 5 laps left.
Yeah.
And then you know – that's how you know when the end is.
Got it.
And you race it out to the end.
Yeah. How many people in something like that, on that particular type of course, how many people are there out there at one time?
You know, we have races that are as small as 10 people.
Yeah.
And there's races that will have 50 or 60. at the pro level, they'll have, you know, over 100 sometimes. You know, it would get tight with that for sure.
Yeah, it would. I mean, that's what I was thinking of. Like if they went in different – you know, if it was all based on time and they mm-hmm. went in different – you know, like you're going to be in section two or something. You know, because, 100 people in that kind of various seems.
The race on Sunday, I think the biggest race had maybe 25.
Okay. Yeah. Which does a lot of people riding in one area like that.
Right. It's about as many as I like.
Yeah, exactly. Holy cow. Well, Dustin, how'd cycling come into your life?
Pretty randomly, actually. When I was getting out of the Army.
And you're the youngest one in the room today.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. So how old are you about?
26.
26, okay.
Mm-hmm. Pretty randomly, I got back from Iraq at the beginning of 2009, and I got out of the Army about the summer of 2010, and started putting on weight as I was getting out of the Army.
When you got out of the Army, you were in pretty good shape, huh?
No, not really.
Not really? Okay.
No, that last year, it fell off pretty good.
Okay.
I was, like, short-timing and stuff, so they really, you know, didn't have to go to physical training and everything.
Okay.
And so a lot of that stuff really fell off because they needed – my unit was deploying again, so we kind of separated off, and we were responsible for, like, a lot of garrison duties and stuff. So
Okay. They're
like, as long as you show up to work, you don't need to run and stuff like that. And so I was kind of unhappy right as I was getting out, putting on a lot of weight, even while I was still in the military and stuff. Still probably out of regulations in terms of the where my weight was and everything, but they didn't really, you know, they were just letting me go.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I was tired of running because I ran a lot in the Army. And before I went to Iraq, we had a first sergeant and a commander that were running addicts. So, like, the longest run I had been on before we deployed was, like, 16 miles. And we didn't even know we were going on a 16-mile run that morning.
Yeah.
You know? So I was like, I don't want to run. And then I was like, I want to find an easy way to lose weight. And I thought to myself, well, if bike ride and work for Lance Armstrong, that's good enough for me. That's literally what I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just kind of snowballed from there. I called a bike shop in Temple, and I was like, hey, I want a bike.
And, so you were over in Texas?
Yeah, I was at Fort Hood.
Okay, mm-hmm. Got it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was in some of the best cycling in the country and didn't ride for like 4 years.
Yeah.
But I was preoccupied.
Sure,
so.
Yeah.
So anyway, I called, and I was like, I want a bike. And they're like, what sort of bike? And I was like, I don't know, you know.
One that'll help me lose weight.
Sure. They're like a road bike. I was like, yeah. And they're like, well, come by our shop. And so I did a little research and figured out what all this stuff meant a little bit. So I wasn't so much of a noob going into the shop, but I still really was. And ended up getting like a real entry-level aluminum road bike and started riding. Like, this was the last month I was in the Army, basically. So I started riding a little bit. And I got home, got back to good Louisiana food and started going to school, and I was riding, but not a lot, and kept putting on weight. And then one day in December 2010, it must have been right around Christmas, I hit like 285. And
wow, and if people saw you in person today, I mean, that's quite a bit heavier than.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Charlie jokes that I lost a whole person.
Yeah.
Like a really skinny cyclist.
Yeah.
I probably lost about 125 pounds up till now. I'm kind of a little fluctuating after I graduated, but getting it back down. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, about 120 pounds off from then. That day I was riding just big and chunky in the cold and the wind, and I was like, I got to do something. Like, I had committed, like, right there at that point to – it was like a turning point for me. And after that, I started riding more and more, and then I kind of fell into a group ride called Petit Paris Cycling that – they used to always traditionally meet in St. Martinville. That's how I met Charlie. And I think one of the things he had said, like, later on to me the first time he saw me, was like, oh, this guy can't – he won't stay with it. Like, I showed up real big still, probably about 260 or 250 at that time. And I stuck around because, you know, I was just so big that ride, it wasn't as fast as, like, where we are now racing. But at the time, it was a big hurdle to go like 17, 18 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, now it's like that's nothing. But so it kind of just evolved from there and losing weight, and then I got a new bike and I started going to the faster group rides in Lafayette. And
I'm going to back you up a minute. Mm-hmm. When you're at that point in your life where you said, okay, I show up with that group and I'm still pretty big, you know, for your size, mm-hmm. and because and you said, you know, you made that choice, but there's some things that influence when choices come in at that point. You know, there's a lot of folks, you know, really, mm-hmm. right, that would have been like, oh, crap, this is too hard. I'm not doing it, you know. What do you think that it was for you that allowed you to keep going back, to keep getting on that bike?
I don't want to really say discipline or something. I specifically remember the feeling of, like, wanting to kind of achieve, like, to be able to hang on. And, you know, each time it got a little better around then and stuff. And it hurt, though. I mean, that was some painful riding at first, especially. And I don't know. It's kind of hard to pinpoint because a lot of people would have stopped. And for some reason, I didn't. Maybe I was kind of fed up with how things were going and everything, and I needed, like, a productive outlet. And sure. I think that's kind of why I liked it and why I kind of kept coming back to it, because I saw progress. And so it was like, oh, this hurts, but I'm losing quite a bit of weight and seeming to getting healthier and stuff like that. And so I think it was just a culmination of a lot of things. But I'm not sure, but mm-hmm. I know that exact feeling you're talking about, because I was there quite a few times and had got, like, shelled and kind of dropped off from the ride and was like, oh, this sucks.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us, I mean, I think a lot of people get to that point mm-hmm. at times, no matter what it is. And it might be physical discomfort because of a number of things, you know, mm-hmm. but it's like, oh, man, I want to do this. But, you know, I'm wondering, too, with you serving in the Army, you know, you mentioned the word discipline. Do you feel that had an effect at all on you continuing to show up?
Yeah, probably so. Cycling in the long term for me, like racing on the team and stuff, has kind of replaced some of the camaraderie and stuff I had when I was in the Army. And it's good to be on a team and share all those bonds, fellowship, and the riding community around here, like the club guys who ride with us on the group rides and stuff, and just some of the other people I ride with around here are awesome. And those are people that I would have never, ever met yeah. otherwise. The only kind of shared interest is just, you know, two wheels on a metal frame or a carbon frame or whatever. And, you know, like Charlie's one of my best friends now, and he's 40 and I'm 26. And so it's like cycling brought us all together. I have, besides my brother, who's my best friend, all the rest of my friends kind of came through cycling. And so it's like I don't know how I got tangential to that.
No, but that's a big important part of it. I think that's what keeps, you know, when you find a passion and then you find other people who understand that, you know, that's a big part too. And mm-hmm. it could have been for you to keep you getting on that bike, you know?
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah, thanks. I think a lot of it was when I would show up and stuff, especially at first, is the people who would ride, they were very encouraging and stuff too. So I think that had a lot to do with it. You know, it was a pretty laid back group when I rode with them, and very friendly guys and stuff like that, and a few girls too. And they're all pretty encouraging. So I think that probably helped a lot too.
Yeah. Well, and I know in this area now there's a number of different groups that get together. Not everybody races. Mm-hmm. Do the two of you ever go on those? You know, I know they get together and do like Saturday morning rides or Sunday. Do you ever do any of those things, or are you pretty much?
No, on the weekends when there's not races or that we're not racing, you know, there's several group rides in town. One that leaves out of Pack and Paddle, one that leaves out of Rouse's, you know, so several places that people leave from. So we definitely take part in those. And we also try to support the other organizations that have you know, charity type events.
Exactly.
You know, charity rides where they're raising money for something or the other. And we, as a team, try to show up and, you know, support those events too. For sure.
And I know, like, you know, we talked about Trail at the beginning. You know, they've been so great at looking at all kinds of, you know, trails throughout the Acadiana area. And then you have, you know, you talk about doing some fundraising, the Cruz de Velo, which is the St. Landry Parish group. You know, they have been very instrumental in starting to get a lot of the Share the Road signs. Mm-hmm. You know, they did fundraisers to pay for those along, you know, the I-49 service road in that area. So, you know, doing a lot of great community things.
And I think I find, you know, some places I've heard that some places that the different cycling communities sometimes don't get along very well. The hardcore road bike racers and the triathletes and then the recreational riders are kind of all on platoon, you know, different islands.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the case here. I think there's a lot of crossover amongst the groups, and we all, you know, tend to get along with each other and go to each other's events and support each other's events. I don't know that it's unique, but I think that it's somewhat unique, at least.
And I wonder about that, Charlie, because, you know, in this area, I was working in Lafayette when you really started to see a lot of. I forgot what they used to call it, but they used to do the rides here on Fridays.
Critical Mass?
Thank you. They would do the Critical Mass. But, you know, and then Scott Schilling and, you know, a bunch of people would come together where there wasn't really a lot of cycling period going on. I mean, you had people who were doing it, but not that were coming together as groups or for events and all that. And I just wonder if, you know, that all that has been fairly recent, you know, it's not like it's been 25 years or anything here, that, you know, everybody had this common goal of just wanting to create that awareness, and if that, you know, helped to create some of that bond, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm fairly recent to the sport, and so I think there's a pretty good history of cycling in the area. But I know it's gotten bigger.
Lately. Yeah. Because I think of, like, you know, we were talking earlier, I grew up in Wisconsin. You saw it a lot. And people were just – there were groups and there were organized, you know, event things happening quite a few years ago. And it's really great to see that that's happening here, you know. But it was a real grassroots effort,
right?
You know. And I think that creates, you know, that whole bonding part with that. I want to talk to for a moment and for people that are listening, because we're going to get a little bit into talking about some of the racing, okay? We talked, Charlie, you spoke to Criterium, that. But if we look at some of the other categories, because I noticed when like Strava was one of the websites that came up, you know, when you can see people, you know, what they raced in, where they placed and all that, they would list and these terms would come up pretty frequently. And so we talked about that Omnium Prologue Criterium and road race.
Right.
And Criterium you talked about, which is the shorter races that tend to take place in a
Shorter course, right?
Shorter course, okay. A prologue.
The prologue is kind of a title for the first event when it's a time trial.
Okay.
But the prologue is, in our Omnium at least, it's a time trial. It's a type of event that it is. And what a time trial is, it's a set distance. In our case, it's about 4 miles. They can be any distance, though. They can be 3 miles to 60 miles, depending on the event. And that one is one where each individual starts on their own. They're not in a group.
Okay.
And there's a time gap between each starter. Sometimes it's a minute. Sometimes it's 2 minutes. And your results are based on your time across that course.
Got it. Okay.
So it's you against the clock.
Yeah.
And then you compare everybody's results against the clock, and that's how you get your placings.
Yeah.
And so that's a time trial. And for our Omnium, an Omnium is a collection of events. For our Omnium, the time trial is first, and so we're calling it the prologue.
Got it. Okay. All right.
So you'll notice in the Tour de France, a lot of times, the first event, they'll call it the prologue.
And yeah.
It'll be usually a short time trial.
Okay. So now you brought up Tour de France, because then and you know, another question, when you talk about having a team, and so let's look at with the ABC team, the Acadiana Bicycle Company racing team that's out of this area. How many people do you think belong to that? Do you know how many?
Well, that actively race,
yeah,
probably on the order of 12 or 13.
Okay.
But –
and is that broken down into smaller teams then, like four?
The races themselves, there'll be different categories.
Okay.
So there's multiple races going on at the same time. Mm-hmm. So there'll be – when you start racing, you start off as what's called a Category 5 beginner.
Okay.
Okay, so – and then after you do a certain number of races, you can move up to what's called Category 4. And you don't have to have won anything. You could just – after a certain number of events, 10 – you can move to four.
Okay, let me ask you, is that When you move up, is that done through the USA?
USAC.
Right?
United States Association of Cyclists.
And is that how the license – because that's the other question I had, the non-licensed riders versus the
– Right, the license
is through, where that comes in,
yeah,
the categories?
License is through that organization, USAC.
Got it.
Kind of governs cycling in the United States.
Sure. So that's how the categories are. I mean, mm-hmm. You're moving up through that organization.
Moving up through the categories with being the entry on up to one.
Okay.
And from 4 to 3 to 2 to 1 is all results-based.
Okay.
You have to win or place in a certain number of events, and then you can move up to the next category.
Okay.
And the idea is to keep riders of at least relative skill level together.
Got it. Okay. So when – because it seems like when I've watched different things too, that there would be like 4-man teams or 4-women teams or, and there might be more than one team. Like ABC Racing Team may have a couple teams entered into.
Right. So ABC, we're one big team, and I race usually in the Masters category, which is for riders over 40 years old, and they can be of any category.
Okay.
Any level,
okay.
Basically from 4 to 1. And there's 4 or 5 of us that typically race in those races. And so we race together as a team in the race.
Okay.
And then there's several Category 4 riders and a couple of Category 3 riders. And so when they are racing their races, they act as a team together.
Mm-hmm. And it's so, based on the time, how the team comes together or no?
Cycling's kind of an unusual sport.
Yeah.
To talk about as a team, and it's a little difficult to understand sometimes. Everyone's racing for themselves, for their own particular finish.
Sure.
But you work together.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's various ways you can work together within the race.
Cycling can be like described as the ultimate team sport for the individual. Right. Individual team sport.
Yeah, okay.
So it's not an accumulation of there's 4 people in a race. It's not an accumulation of your time or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that you're helping each other in that race.
Yeah,
there's lots of different ways you can do that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's say that like this one, the Harbor Master that you just competed in, though, that was just you individually doing your thing.
No, there were actually five of us, I believe.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
On the same team that raced the Masters race together.
Got it.
And so, we assisted each other. During that race to put each other into different positions.
And, I mean, that's maneuvering your bike based on everybody else.
Maybe attacking the group, so mm-hmm. trying to ride away from the group.
Yeah,
so that they would be forced to chase you while your teammates can just get in a slipstream and rest. And then if they catch you, then one of those guys attacks. And so there's lots of different tactics that mm-hmm. you can take. The end result is that one of these people places the highest.
Yeah.
So it's an individual placing, but also the team accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. All right. So there you are, and you know that something like that's going to have to happen, where maybe mm-hmm. somebody's going to have to ride off, and the other. How do you know what each other's going to do? Is that prior or is that during?
Both. Basically, for the Masters teams, we have this guy. His name's Kevin Landry. Used to race in California and Criteriums and stuff for years. He's been
his
racing.
Name came up a lot in those. Like mm-hmm. those Strava things.
What, okay. Oh, yeah. He's the guy with the super thighs.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right.
And so he's really good with tactics. He's raced on a lot of teams. And so there's a lot of prior discussion. And we all train together very frequently. So we typically know where we all are at as riders. And the Masters team, Charlie doesn't want to toot his own horn or whatever, but the Masters team has been doing exceptional in all the Masters races this year. Very good teamwork. It's like the ultimate team sport for the individual in the sense of like whoever's right, like our Masters team has multiple threats. We have a guy who can sprint well. So how cycling works is, especially in criteriums or road races, and road races are like longer races, basically you're trying to do 2 things. You're trying to either get a breakaway up the road where it's one of your riders with a group of other riders or off by himself if he could stay somehow and trying to get time away from the main field to avoid a bunch sprint. And basically if you have a what's called a good composition, so like say if there's 4 riders up the road and 2 of those riders are your teammates, you're going to want that breakaway to stay away because you have a 50% chance of winning by numbers of that out of that breakaway. So you might, you know, in the back of the group block and try to slow the race down a little bit and make sure they stay away. And if nothing happens, you know, then towards the end of the race, you basically everyone kind of sets up for a field sprint. And but there's a lot of attacks and people riding off and getting caught, and it's
because instinctive, I would think, after a while.
Oh, yeah.
You learn what you're doing, and yeah.
The guys that are racing masters, we've raced together now for a few years.
Yeah.
And we know each other's strengths.
Yeah.
Like Dustin was saying, from, you know, our training races, we know, you know, who's stronger at certain aspects of cycling, and we don't we'll discuss it a little bit before now, but for the most part, we just fall into our routines.
Yeah. You
and,
know,
and everybody kind of, for instance, in that Harbor Master race, myself and one of my teammates was in a break at the end, and he's better at attacking and riding off away for a few laps and trying to win that way, and I'm better at sprinting. So when it got down to one or two laps remaining, he attacked. And the attempt was to get away and win, but the other thing that can happen there is you force the other people in the break to chase him down if they want to win. Meanwhile, I can just sit on the back and take advantage of the slipstream.
Yeah, lay back in the wheel.
They did happen to catch him, and so now I'm more rested than the other guys that were in the breakaway, and so it's easier for me to win the sprint. So lots of stuff like that. We don't discuss it in the race. We just know how.
You just know. Mm-hmm.
You know, we each need to race, and we just do it. You know?
Got it. Very cool. Well, we're going to take a short break, and both guys brought in some music that is inspirational to them with cycling. Cecil, let's go with the Silver CD with Charlie's, and we'll listen to track one, which is the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and this is Give It Away.
You.
All right. Red Hot Chili Peppers. Give it away. If you're just joining us, this is The Exchange on KRVS 88.7 FM or on the web, krvs.org. Please check out the website. Great. You can find the podcasts, a lot of past shows of all the locally produced programs that we have here, as well as the nationally produced programs. And tip of the hat to everybody who continues to support our station. We are listener supported, and we are a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, right here at Cypress Lake Studios. You can click on the website. You'll see the donate button and continue to help us year round. So we do thank you. My guest in the studio today, we have been talking cycling and racing, and my guest, Charlie Kibbe of New Iberia, and he's with Precision Engineering Solutions, and also Dustin Junis. See, I did it. Dustin Junis. I do want to mention, too, they both are products of the university here, so it's always nice to have former students back here at the station. I want to talk a little bit, though, you guys, before we get back into some more things, just about you two with cycling. But the event that is coming up, it is the 7th annual in Love Vuelta de Acadiana, which will be the 4th of July weekend, and it runs July 5th through the 6th. And let's talk a little bit about how people can, if they, because you can register, it said, I think, up until Thursday, July 3rd. You can still do
online,
that.
Online, you can register day of, actually.
Okay, and the day of you can, mm-hmm. Okay. How would people find out about that event? What's the best way?
A couple of ways. You can go to our Facebook page, which is Acadiana Bicycle Company Racing. It's a group page on Facebook, and there'll be a link there. And then also our webpage is abc.ccracinginc.org, abc.ccracinginc.org. But the easiest way is probably going to the Facebook page.
Yeah. And then I found, too, you know, most people go on and search. I mean, if you go on and search for, you know, La Vuelta de Acadiana, and that's V-U-E-L-T-A, it was interesting. It talks about that term was derived from a loose French and Spanish translation, mm-hmm. as the short voyage of Acadiana.
Yeah.
It's a term, though, that you – you know, as I was just reading about it and thinking about that, you know, you just kind of want to throw your arm up in the air and go, La Vuelta. You know, it's like something you feel like you'd want to yell at.
So you have the Tour de France, and then they have two other grand tours, the Giro d'Italia, Tour Italy, and the Vuelta a España.
Yeah, because comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that's the name for – so it's basically Tour of Spain. So it's like Tour of Acadiana.
Okay. And then again, just to – if you can give people maybe a rundown of the categories, you know, that people could get involved in if they do, you know, want to register and participate in that.
Yeah. So, you know, for entry-level people, it would be Category 5.
Okay.
You'd register in that race. You can register – you know.
And for some of those, do you see like people who have never done that before?
Oh, yeah. Charles Bustani came in the race last year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And he hasn't been able to do any other races, but he came and did the time trial.
Yeah.
You know, for that one. So lots of people dip their toe in the water with that time trial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
It's a relatively short event. You could ride it on any kind of bicycle that you want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, and as a Category 5, you don't have to have been even previously licensed. You can get a one-day racing license.
Yep.
You do have to have a license, though, to be a part of this?
To race anything other than Cat 5, Category 5. But Category 5, you can buy a one-day racing license.
And you can do that, I'm assuming, right at the event.
Yeah, they'll have registration forms for that.
Oh, very cool. Okay.
And then, you know, all the other categories, if you're racing in one of the other categories, it won't have been your first race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so you can race whichever category.
That's right, because you have to qualify to keep moving up.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And so you can race and whichever one you qualify for.
Yeah.
And then there's three, you know, races that make up the whole event, the time trial, the criterium. Those two are on Saturday.
Yeah.
And then Sunday morning is a road race.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And now I saw too, and I want to see if this is correct. Is it happening here in Lafayette?
Yep.
And the start line address is on South College Road.
Okay. So that's the criterium.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
Where is that exactly? Where the it's, what part of South College?
Next right to on? The old Celeron Tower, which is College and Cali Saloon.
Oh, right there. Okay,
yep.
Got
mm-hmm.
it. Okay.
So it's next to the Hampton, right there, or that Advantial Bank.
Got
the,
it.
The start
okay.
and finish is right across mm-hmm. from the front doors of the Hampton Inn.
Okay.
On South College.
And so then some of these, it's going to run through parts of the on the, you know,
kind
of
going to go through the office park right there. It's just a closed course that kind of goes through that office park on the back by where the old Kmart was.
Okay,
not all
sure.
the way to that parking lot, but it's a closed course that runs on College and that kind of back course right there through some roads that make up like an office park.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, before, mm-hmm. like if you were heading down College Slum going towards Evangeline Thruway, mm-hmm. yeah, you'd hit.
And
okay.
you just take a right by the big building.
Got
and,
it.
Kind of what we're asking.
That's a nice setting for that.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah.
It's
great.
The criterium is – it's the second event, but mm-hmm. it's typically the most viewer-friendly. So
yeah.
if you wanted to come out
okay.
and watch a bicycle race,
mm-hmm. yeah.
that's your best bet because you get to see the competitors – repeatedly because they're doing the same very mm-hmm. short loop over and over.
Yeah.
And the way our course is laid out, it doubles back on itself.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you can actually see probably three quarters of the race
from one spot.
From one sitting spot. Mm-hmm. And there's a short walk to the back part of the course if you wanted to go and see that area mm-hmm. as
yeah.
well. So criteriums are popular in the United States because they use a very small amount of territory and they're very viewer friendly or fan
sure.
friendly.
That's like what you did. That was the Harbor one in New Orleans.
Yes.
Yeah, that was that kind of race. Okay.
Right.
And, so
and
yeah,
that course was that way as well. You could walk across it very easily. You could see the riders in almost all of it. You know, at any point in time, very easily.
Got it. Okay. And it gets started at what time? Do you? I don't know if that's on there.
It should start mid.
It start about two o'clock.
Oh, yeah. So it starts mid after
2
wow.
o'clock through about 8 o'clock.
Yeah. Okay,
so you get
some of the heat.
Yeah,
yeah.
basically, I think the Cat 5 and the women's and the juniors they go like kind of first, and then the higher the categories or the lower the numbers, so like the more skillful or advanced racers they'll race later in the day. So like,
yeah. Well, I'm going to back you up for a second because you said the juniors and the women's, but in whatever the categories are, is it mixed, men and women?
It could be if it's an open event, and most
mm-hmm.
of them are.
Oh, got it.
Typically,
okay.
what happens is the women typically race with the women in
okay.
the women's field.
All right.
But there has been some races that I've been to where either because of field size or because of the level of the woman racing,
yeah.
she raced with one of the men's fields.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay.
So and in ours, it's going to go in order of juniors, then women. Then the Cat 5s and the Masters.
Yeah, okay.
And then the 4s and then the 1-2-3s.
Okay.
And so the races are sequential, not going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So you can watch all of them,
yeah.
you know, in one sitting, basically.
So, folks, you can, if you've never done it before, you can show up that day, actually. And, again, it's the weekend of July 4th, July 5th, and 6th. You can find out more about the 7th annual La Vuelta de Acadiana, which the trail organization is presenting that this year. Go to their Facebook page. Or, you know, like I said, when you search for them on it, a bunch of stuff comes up right away. But you can take part in it. Also, a great family-friendly event, too, to get everybody out there to watch what's going on. You know, if you've never seen – I've had the opportunity to actually really watch quite a few. Not here, but at other places. And it's a great event to watch, you know. And both of you are going to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to enter. You already entered, I'm assuming.
Yes.
All right. What are you looking forward to with it?
Oh, I'm kind of a tech nerd and a training nerd like Charlie is. So I like doing the time trial
yeah.
and the road race and stuff. Crits are not my favorite thing, but I'll do it. It's all fun. I really enjoy racing with the team more than anything else.
Are there other like the ABC racing team? Are there other teams like that in the
mm-hmm.
Acadiana area?
Oh, well, not Acadiana.
Not in Acadiana, but
okay.
there's several teams within – The organization here locally is called LAMBRA,
mm-hmm.
it's Louisiana Mississippi Bike Racing Association.
Okay.
So within that organization, there's a number of teams
mm-hmm.
you know that compete.
Got it.
Yeah,
okay.
our two states race combined.
Yeah, so we've got other racing teams throughout the state of Louisiana.
Yes.
There are. Yeah.
yeah.
Okay. But you're our representative for this area.
That's right.
Very, very cool. All right. So you're a nerd.
Yeah, a little
you
bit.
Said you're gonna. I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
And if it's one of the answers, we'll just have to watch how we say it. But there was a thing I found where you were describing yourself, and I don't know what. If I don't think it was a Facebook page, but it. I think with graduating, you were in chemical engineering here at UL, and but you said you try to live by rule number 5.
Oh, okay.
And is it rule number five connected to the cycling mm-hmm. organizations? Mm-hmm. And it, would it start with Harden the something?
Yeah.
Yeah, so which I think is very cool. We can't say it on the air, but uh-huh. it's really, man, get yourself tough. Harden
yeah, there's
the
a,
whatever
a. There's a website called, well, it's called Velomantia, and it's kind of this tongue-in-cheek thing. You go type in Velomantia in Google, and it'll be the first page. You click on it, and you go to the rules, and you can read them because they're all kind of tongue-in-cheek.
Rules for cycling.
Yeah.
Right?
Pretty much road cycling specifically.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And it's this whole, like, cultural, Eurocentric sort of hard man. Because cycling has that image, especially in Europe, of being a hard man sport. Like, there's these races called the Classics that take place in Belgium and Italy and the Netherlands and stuff. And there's five monuments in those. And they're in, like, they go over cobbles and real bad terrain, and you know, sometimes it's snowing or raining and it's just miserable, and they're like, yeah, that's cool. And so, like, these Velomantia guys, they really embrace that and the whole old school cycling, like, imagery and stuff. And so they have a long list of tongue-in-cheek rules that like that people kind of conveniently follow. But, like, every rule comes back to rule number five.
Yeah, okay. Because mm-hmm. that's the one that, you know, yeah. makes you hang in there.
Yeah.
I got a kick out of that. That was very cool. You know, Charlie, you were talking earlier, too, about, you know, some of the things that happen with, you know, when you're racing as a team. And when we were off air, you know, listening, when we had the song playing, because I really did have the thought that, at first, that cycling, the teams did wear, you know, earphone things. And then I thought I was wrong on that. But on the professional level, they actually do that.
Right. They do wear ear communication devices in the professional ranks. There's a kind of a controversy about that now. And there's some races now that they're banned. And they're kind of experimenting with not having them in some races. And with the thought being that having they call it race radios, having the race radios makes the racing a little too predictable. The racers are able to get information from team directors about maybe how far a breakaway is up the road or that sort of thing. Whereas if you don't have the race radio, you have to pay attention to that yourself. Once they're out of sight, you have no idea how far away they are, so you don't know how hard to gauge your effort. So it makes the racing more unpredictable.
Yeah.
And at our level, we don't have race radios.
As a rule? Is that like something?
And, you know,
or
I'm not even really sure if it's a rule or not. It wouldn't really be practical. We wouldn't have anybody on the road following us anyhow.
Yeah.
I imagine it's a rule, but I don't really know that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And you said you're kind of middle of the road on that.
Well, yeah. Like I like the idea of race radios for just what's called race radio. You can communicate with your team car, your director, basically your coach, who's telling you what to do. But there's also supposed to be this aspect of like neutral race support, race safety sort of stuff, which is okay. And like one of the actual big criticisms of the race radio is that not enough of the neutral stuff is actually broadcast, or they can't hear it because they're talking back and forth to their team cars and stuff like that. But
what do you mean when you say a lot of the neutral stuff?
Like there's different channels, I think, that you can be on with this race radio. And so they might not be tuned into the neutral channel. They might be talking to their coach or whatever.
Got it.
And, you know, there might be, something up the road or bad conditions or whatever. And the other thing that, the very pro level, they do, like, even in the races that don't have a race radio, the race is responsible to report the time gaps. Like, if a breakaway is, like, 2 or 3 minutes up the road, they will have, like, a little motorbike. You'll see it in the Tour de France, and they'll hold up the time. But the thing is, that's not necessarily all that accurate, because by the time they get back, or it might be missed time. So, like Charlie was saying, you got to kind of gauge your efforts. And so the thing is about race radios now is, like, they know kind of real time, and they can calculate it and say, if you ride at this speed, this hard, this many guys, you'll catch them. You know, and they always try to – the golden rule is on a flat stage to try to catch them about 6 or 7 miles from the end. And without a race radio, a lot of times sometimes it just doesn't happen. So I'm kind of with him in the sense of, like, they shouldn't be able to communicate with the team car.
But technology. Yeah. You know, as things keep getting more advanced, mm-hmm. you know, you kind of lose and you lose some of that grassroots part of that, you know, some of that instinctive things you're talking
we
about.
We like the technology aspect of it, like I said earlier. Yeah. One thing you can see on our Facebook page, we have a number of videos. A couple of us
it's fun.
Have a camera on our on our mm-hmm. bike, and you can see the race from the inside.
That's a very cool thing. People, if you need to go at Facebook just to look at that, because that was I forgot about that. That was very nice.
Yeah. So, sometimes you see some things you don't want to see. There'll be a wreck or something.
Yeah.
So a couple of races ago, I captured a wreck right in front of me on the, on the camera. And there's kind of a discussion in the pro ranks about putting cameras on the bikes for pro races mm-hmm. so that – people watching these races on TV have that same kind of view.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a movement toward getting that done as well.
Yeah. It would make it a lot more entertaining.
What kind of camera are you – what do you – I mean, it's a pretty
small
camera.
It's a very small HD camera. It's it's kind of like a GoPro. Mine's not a GoPro brand. But
yeah, but you can mount it on your –
You mount it on the handlebars. Okay. And it just continuously records. And then after the fact, I can take it in a little post-production, add the speed and that sort of thing to it.
Yeah.
So you can see how fast I was going at that particular time.
Yeah.
And it's neat, and it helps to encourage people to get involved. You know,
that's right.
Gives you an idea of what actually goes on.
Yeah. Why should people get on a bike? Why should people get on a bike?
You know, it's a very healthy activity.
Yeah.
You know, I find it healthy for my body as well as my mind when I'm – stressed out, I find that a long bike ride a lot of times will give me a chance to, to kind of recenter myself.
Yeah.
So that's kind of one of my main reasons for doing it.
How old – you said you had kids. How old are they?
I have an 11-year-old and a 7-year-old.
Do they get on bikes?
Yeah, like kids do. BMX bikes and ride around. And they're very active.
yeah. And that's – but Dad used to do that too. So. Yeah. Why, Dustin, should people get on a bike?
Well, there's also a lot more besides fitness that it offers. It's like you get a lot of fellowship and meet people that you'd never met. But also it kind of gives you a opportunity just, like this morning I was out riding by myself. I'm kind of in between an introvert and extrovert. So it's a good way for me to reset by myself and think. So it's you can kind of escape into yourself a little bit and then – you're out in nature and stuff a lot too, and so you can, I was thinking about that this morning, like, well, why do I ride a little bit? And it's mm-hmm. like, I was riding out by Karen Crow. That's a part of Cadiana that I have no real association with or whatever, but because I like to ride, well, I've gotten to see it, and so you can see new places and just kind of enjoy, the world and everything, and it's kind of amazing because there's so many, like, secondary and kind of tertiary sort of things that pop up from riding a bike that you think wouldn't have anything to do with it, but
that's right.
Feel better and not just physically or health wise, but you get a that dopamine and serotonin sort of thing and it's sometimes when I'm riding, especially by myself, you kind of get lost in your thoughts, and then especially on a more leisurely ride and thinking about stuff, and then you're like, oh, I'm here. And it's like, how do you kind of lose yourself like mm-hmm. that while you're doing an mm-hmm. activity? It's that's pretty cool to find something
good
that you can do.
Good state of mind to get into.
Yeah. Oh,
that's
yeah.
right. Mm-hmm. Very cool. And there's so many different kinds of bikes out there now. They kind of make something for everybody to make it, pretty accessible,
mm-hmm.
For a lot of folks. So, again, we do have the 7th annual of Vuelta de Acadiana, that trail. The organization is presenting 4th of July weekend, and it'll take place July 5th through the 6th here in Lafayette. Best way to find out about that is go to the Acadiana Bicycle Company Racing Team Facebook page, and you can search for them too, and search for La Vuelta de Acadiana. And like I said, a lot of information comes up on that. Also want to mention to check out latrail.org. That's for the nonprofit trail organization. That's Transportation Recreation Alternatives in Louisiana, and that group has done a really nice job at creating awareness and creating trails. So that's been a wonderful thing. Good luck to the two of you.
Thank you.
With that
Thank you.
Coming up. You have other races following that one that
uh-huh.
you've got coming up this summer?
Yeah. Lambert puts together a calendar, like all the different race teams try to put on a race, and then, the other teams kind of support it. So that's kind of how we – maintain a racing calendar. So I think there's quite a few races in August and September.
Yeah. And I also imagine, too, that if people – and I know Trail is an organization they can contact, but there's plenty of opportunity for volunteers.
Oh, you know, you always need volunteers.
Yeah, so there you go. And that's a wonderful way, you know, if you're not riding, to be involved in the event and may get you to become interested in riding at some point. But volunteers are – usually what is the main thing that keeps those events going.
Yes, mm-hmm.
You know, so go to the Facebook page. There's a way you can contact folks on there for that. Well, Charlie Kibbe and Dustin Judice, it has been a pleasure to have you on here today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Absolutely wonderful. And I'm so glad to hear what's happening with the team and happening throughout our area. So everybody have a good week. Remember 4th of July weekend. Go out to right off college on South College Road off of College Saloon, July 5th through 6th for La Vuelta de Acadia, the 7th annual. We're going to go out. How about we're going to do the red, white, and blue CD, Cecil, and we'll do track one. Dustin brought this in. This is Marathon by Rush. Everybody have a good week.
Verdi was always drawn to challenging literature, as in his compelling drama Louisa Miller, based on a play by Friedrich Schiller. Sometimes overlooked, the opera features a series of evocative choruses and one of Verdi's finest overtures. I'm Lisa Simeoni. Join me for Louisa Miller from Lausanne, next time on World of Opera.
Monday night at 7 on KRVS.
Hi, I'm Pete Bergeron. If your day starts early, like mine does, let's spend it together with Cajun music from 5 to 7 a.m. here at Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.